of my radio station.
Blog
Who knows
Talk
what's
Radio.
Happen.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host. This is MJ Network. MJ in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce. We have Minister Sam Oliver here, and we're going to be talking about some very serious topics. Because of this horrific pandemic, I think everybody needs to talk about healing care, soul care, and unfortunately, everyone's life, hospice and end-of-life care, and stress and mental health, and how this pandemic is working on our minds. So good morning, Sam. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Hanging in there. So,
good.
Healing care. We talked about this before. I think one of the major things is that a lot of people feel a lot of stress and mental anguish. How do you deal with that during this time? And how does healing care help you? Strengthen your mind and your body. How does that help you?
You know, so much of our life is spent on identifying with things outside of ourselves. And when you take those roles and experiences away from us, especially people who have a strong identity in a particular job that they do, they've trained for all of their life, and if that is taken away, they think that there's nothing left, when yet the deeper aspects of who we are and what rooted us and what inspired us to do any and everything that we do in life comes from that place in the form. It is the foundation, the core of who we are. And this is a time in our life when we can deeply get rooted and connected to that part of it that brought us into existence to fulfill a particular role in any aspect of life at any given era in life. And when we come to realize that and find and make peace with that, we enable ourselves to be transformed by the life that we now live in and move from the one that just passed away and move in the one that has given us an opportunity to live in another one. And since we're eternal beings, when you go to that place where you're given that ability to find your existence in this world and find your ability to move within it purposefully from that place instead of from a place of being shaken by the world around you, you're actually working from a place of your most authentic power. That is your soul operating at that point. And if many people would just take this time in their life to get in tune with that part of themselves that is their greatest strength, they will find a peace in the midst of this despair and an opportunity there for creativity to breathe through you, because it's when we allow life to move through us rather than from us that we not only identify with the greatest opportunity for healing and transformation to take place, but we get in touch with our Creator that gives us the ability to know what true and authentic healing actually is at that point.
That is so true. I mean, I know that, you know, I walk in the street every single day, and it's very quiet. People are walking together, and nobody's talking to anybody. And you could see the anguish in their faces. You could see that they're annoyed that they have to wear a mask in a store. You could see that they're annoyed if they have to wait online. They just seem so stressed out. How does this stress and how does this deal with families that have to stay at home and work from home all the time? and with children that have this distance learning, and I get into that afterwards about my own opinion as an educator with distance learning, let me tell you. How does families deal with that at home? How do you work together so that you don't get angry and that you have your own time to just sort of like meditate or talk?
Well, most people, you know, if they're in a good place like we just talked about, when they come home, they probably feel safer. Now, there's some who don't. They're in bad homes where people don't know how to find that place within themselves. But I want to back up to something you said at the beginning about being in public and people walking around in anguish and fear of each other. Well, they're not afraid so much of each other and catching something from each other as much as we are afraid most of all of if we get in contact with someone else, that could be the end of what the ego knows as life. And it's that fear of living that we're most afraid of. See, we're made to create in the world, and you can't create out of fear. As most people know by now, and people have said several times, there's only fear and there's only love. When you operate out of a fear-based reality, you always go within and you're afraid to act into and out in the world. Because the world, at that point, is not something that's safe anymore. So we've entered into a time where a lot of people are just afraid to live. But they're afraid of each other, but not so much that as much as we are afraid to live from a place of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And see if I can explain that. So many of us get it the opposite. We think that because we're able to act into the world and our will upon it, and we can see things change as a result of all of that, we get convinced over time that we are actually doing something to change the world. When the opposite is true. None of us have the ability to change anything in life unless we're given the power to do so from a place that moves through you and not from you, which takes us out of the ego just enough to get into that creative process with our creator to allow authentic relationships that come and go into our lives to come from a place where we connect in soul with one another. And from that place, we're able to engage in a type of relationship where fear has no room to exist because it's coming from a place of purity and innocence and from a place of love, from your soul at that point. See, we are all made of five elements. And that's what you see all over the world, everywhere in the world. And all of us are connected together. Science tells us you can't take a single atom out of the universe without collapsing the whole. So every one of us has a place in the world, a purpose in the world, and a reason to exist. And if we try to step outside of that through fear or run and hide from that, we're not whole at that point. There's no way that we can participate in the world that's around us because we're not even in the world at that point. We're inside of a small place inside of us that's called the ego or self-centeredness that keeps us away from that being able to live into a life-centered awareness that takes us away from ourselves just enough to where we can operate from a greater power that we participate with and engage in that has the capacity to protect us in ways that science can't even comprehend just yet. There's so many times in each of our lives where none of us can really explain what happens in healing, but it's really oftentimes very simple. All of us are energy and information types of beings that live in this world. And, you know, when you have a child that comes up to you and they just got hurt, and they feel the pain, and all of their identity is in that pain, and it intensifies because they focus on it, and it hurts, and a loving parent comes along, and they may give a little kiss there, but it's really, well, the kiss does help. I won't say it won't, But if they lay their hand right there on where the pain is, for some reason, the attention of that child shifts away from their feelings of fear and into a place where that they can experience a different type of energy on where that pain exists. And they begin to identify with that and then start to absorb it into themselves. And we do this without even thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We call that love, but it's also healing. And when we operate from a place of unconditional love, you take yourself out of the conditions of the world and put yourself in a place that is authentically than every one of us are. And when we begin to know that place as though it were the first time, you know it from a place of such innocence and purity that at that point, what you basically embody at that point, mind, body, and soul, is pure healing, pure love. And a lot of what we have lost is that pathway into our soul over time. We've been very busy with our lives and with an existence building an identity outside of ourselves, not really paying homage to what got us there or what inspired us to get there, losing a lot of sense of meaning and even hope and even faith in it, to where we begin to operate from a place that does break down the immune system, does break down the mind and the emotions, and the worst thing of all, it breaks our heart because the heart knows things that the mind will never be able to understand and can take us to places and engage us in experiences of life that no one, not even ourselves, but no one else would even think is possible. And yet we call that those actions that happen and get displayed in our life as wonderful miracles or acts of heroism, but it is nothing more and nothing less but us expressing our most authentic self.
No, I agree with you. You know, it's funny because, not funny, when I had my problem last week and I looked up at the sky and I said, thank God Dodd was watching over me because it could have been much worse. I know that. I know that. I said, oh, my God, so I have this, and this, and all these miserable things banged up, whatever. And then I looked in the mirror the other day, and I said, you know what? It could have been a whole lot worse, so you'll be fine. But I'm finding also that my nephews are older. They're in their 20s, and they think I'm really pretty cool to talk to. So I'm finding that they're going through a rough time because one is in college and he has to come home and do his work at home. My other one is an investment banker and he had to come home to do his work at home because everything is closed. And my other one lives by himself and he doesn't go outside. He said he has too many germs. But the other two constantly like to call and talk. So I'm finding that sometimes it's good to have an ear to listen and just let them talk it out. And whatever's bothering them, they just feel better. You know, I just listen. I just let them talk it out, and then I'll say, you know, ask a question, and I just listen. I think, what do you think about just talking and giving them somebody else besides a parent to lean on when things are going tough? Because my nephew's in a baseball scholarship. I said, you know what? You'll play in September. That's not the worst thing in the world. My other nephew, you know, he just started this job. I said, you know what? They kept you, so that's good. So what about just talking out things, talking them out with kids or teens?
You know, this is a lot similar to the last topic, but I'm going to take a variation on it, that same theme. In the act of being open to listen to someone who is so deep inside themselves based on fear or concern or anything, the very fact that someone's willing to listen to those fears and with an open heart and with an uncritical mind in the sense that because there's good criticism and then there's bad criticism. The bad one is the one where we really break someone down for feeling a certain way by saying you shouldn't feel that way. But a good critical mind that is unconditional and it's giving and love with an open heart and attentive listening skills that gives you the ability to to listen to what's going on inside of another person's heart actually engages in a place of soul care, because when people talk to us, they're giving us images, and they're giving us through those images a visual expression through the thoughts that they express to you. So there's the mind. The heart also is engaged because it's coming from a place of feeling. And anywhere where the heart and the mind are engaged in creativity, you literally merge into the into a place where soul care becomes more than possible. Mm-hmm. You merge into a place you can coexist together that your physical bodies can't, but your souls can. You begin to resonate with a certain mm-hmm. vibration with each other that actually gives you more ability to think clearer, because you're not the only one in that place anymore. Two heads often, you know, two heads that go in the same direction, I'll put it this way, that with a single purpose to move forward in love, has the ability to be better than just one head operating and thinking about something at any given time. And when we do that, we operate from a place where there is no separation between you and that person at that point, because the mm-hmm. only thing that exists in that moment is love. If that's the place you come from, you operate out of fear, you're going to separate yourself from someone. You operate out of love, you're going to bring you and your relationship together. It has no choice. The only choice that we have is to operate from one place or another, and both of those have a myriad of emotions that are listed underneath that, the different ways in which you get to those same places. But when you operate from your most authentic place, you're going to always enter into that place of love every single time, and you're going to resonate vibrationally with the people and experiences and places around you that will actually bring into unity a more comprehensive awareness that surrounds you. But more than that, it opens a gateway between here and what I would call heaven, or from here to eternity, or to a more broader view that allows you to have inspired thoughts that you would not have had in and of yourself.
Mm. So how would you define soul caring as opposed to healing care? They're both different. I know that.
Well, healing care is a result of soul care, in my mm-hmm. book. You can't have any healing unless you can identify deep enough mm-hmm. inside of a place where you see the world through your eyes and not from them anymore. Let me explain that. When we begin to see through our eyes while we can no longer see with them, we operate from a place where we bring eternity, or I should say more choices, I should say infinite more choices to that particular moment. And how you do it, if we were to take a look at the world around us, no one wants to live in the world that we're experiencing right now. But that's what we can see right now. But when you operate from a place of creativity, now how am I going to find my way into this new world and create my identity that I've been given, my God-given talents, to be able to operate in the world as it is, not the way it was, because that's gone. We're never going to see it again, economically or spiritually again. That debt-based society through a fiat world and economy, we lived off of each other's debt. Now we've got to somehow learn how to live with each other, not based on how much we can get somebody indebted to us and be able to take money that way from them in order to gain our strength, which is more of an external-based society. We've got to learn how to operate from a place of co-creativity together, where mutual benefit happens between two people, two experiences. It's actually putting things on a level playing field at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And when you operate from that place, you truly operate from a place of purity that gives you a reason to live beyond what money and the world can do for you. So in essence, your real power comes from within you now, not from outside of you anymore. And we're living in that world. The world is just transformed into, from what I'm seeing, just transformed into a place where we have the opportunity to express our souls in a way that we have never had before. Everything's out in the open. The good and the bad is really surfacing right now. And in all of us, our fear-based realities and our love-based realities. There's people, there's nurses going and taking care of, and doctors taking care of people right now, knowing that their lives are in danger. And that's not something that we've had to face in the past, or even thought was a fear that we had to face, because we felt like we were protected by all of these immune system shots that we get each and every day, or every year, from our flu shots to any other shots that we have given to our children to vaccinate them over the years. And some of them have proponents in it, and then I knew people that would talk good and bad about that, that there's positive and negative within that. But here's the greatest immune system that I think any of us can have. And that's for each of us to get quiet each morning, go to a place where you can actually know that life is breathing through you. And in a way you can allow yourself to know that life is, I'm sorry for the traffic coming and going here, it's just early in the morning, and I'm talking outside of my home, and your immune system, that's what we were talking about. To be able to breathe life through you, you've got to wake up in a place of such peace, and you've got to hold it throughout the day. Most of us wake up in the morning, and that's our best breath of the day and our best opportunity to get centered into not only what is real, but what can pull us through the rest of the day. Because if you get up with a list of things that you have to do and work from an agenda, which I know you have to do when you go to work at some level, but if you work from a place where that means more to you than adjusting that agenda, if need be, then you've allowed life to take over instead of coming from a place where life-centered awareness might be able to create a different agenda that actually makes more sense than the one that we created at that point. And then you know you're operating from a place of co-creative capacities at that point with our creator, from a more expansive view of what the world is and around us.
I agree with that, because a lot of people get up in the morning, you're right, I list my what I have to do for the day, and I'm saying to myself, okay, I'm going to do something positive first, because I don't need all this, I don't want negatives. But so many people get up in the morning and they say, okay, I can't do this, I can't do that, I have these constraints, I have to wear a mask, I can't do this, I can't visit that one, I can't talk to that one, because I feel like, you know, the governor makes the rules and you have to follow them. So how do you deal with that? And yet, you're right, come from a better place in the morning, because people get up and say, okay, I've got to do all these things, but I can't do them outside, I have to do them inside. Or I can't visit my nephew turned 50 3 weeks ago, and I could watch the party that they had. They videotaped it, so I was able to take part in the car park and whatever he did, but I couldn't be there. And I said, well, at least I got to be there in a sense. How do you deal with these constraints and restrictions and still have a positive attitude? My husband meditates every morning, so he's calm. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to do the same thing. But how do you deal with that?
Well, those are what I call outside pressures. And let me put it this way, and I hope nobody's hearing me too closely or takes it the wrong way. I take those as suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may be moved to act in a way that not only transcends that and is actually more needed at the time than rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And let me give you an example of this. If that were not the case, not a single person would have healed from this virus if people didn't have that perspective I just said. Because we would have stayed away from each other. And we'd have just died, we'd have isolated ourselves. And you know what? Mm-hmm. The worst thing that's happened to all of us during this breakout is being separated from each other on a psychological level. Not so much the physical. We probably do need space from each other to get centered because since we're energy and information, we do interfere with each other's lives in a lot of ways and actually keep people from participating and listening to and allowing people to live from that place. Look how many times when you're in a conversation, someone wants to interrupt you to give you their opinion and they've not heard a word you said. And they're rushed. They rush into it without even knowing where it's coming from inside of you. At that point, and there's where our rules and regulations on what we think life should be like or ought to be like gets in the way from the real forces of life that has the ability to lead us down a path that actually can free us from all of that. Have you ever noticed someone, I notice this as a writer, especially during my writing time, there's only one way to get in touch with creativity, and that's if you get away from people. Maybe listen to music, or listen to silence, listen to nature, listen to any and everything else other than words that have the capacity to cause your mind to think about something other than what your focus is at the time. Because when you focus on one-pointed awareness, one particular purpose, and you have no agenda of where it's going to take you, then you're allowing your heart to open up into a place where life can move into it. And give you expressions upon experiences and ways of operating within that through your imagination and literally create a healing bomb if need be in places where choices, you know, especially if you're going into memories, your memory bank. But if you're operating from a place where you're moving forward and trying to inspire movement forward, you're going to start saying and doing words and maybe even saying something that you've heard and you have to go look up later to see if you spelled it right. You actually become a secretary at that point where you're listening to the breath of your creator move into you to manifest a path in front of you that you would have never seen unless you did all of that. So to me, the writers of the world are incredible co-creators. And they bring into the world an openness to life and an expression of life, even if we disagree with it. But especially if somebody brings in an insight that we have never heard before, you actually open up a channel of expression that allows someone to get in touch with their own creativity through the gift of words. And you get to those words from a place of silence and an open heart and a mind that begins to formulate words from those places, not the other way around. When you write from the head, you're always writing from knowledge. It was Einstein who said that your imagination is the greatest form of intelligence that's possible, way beyond knowledge. And he was a very intelligent man.
Yeah.
And he died. And we forget sometimes that it's in the abundance of our creativity that allows us to be able to operate from a broader perspective than we would have in and of ourselves. And when we do that, we give room for a path to be created collectively with a group of people who may read this and get centered on that path and begin to experience and express what we've just sat down and wrote in words from silence.
Mm-hmm.
They may start doing the same thing, and we formulate a soul group that literally can grow and expand from that moment forward. And at some level, even if we think it's just a few people hearing it, they may go and express it if they're inspired to a few people. And eventually, we never know. But more than likely, at some level, what we do in any given moment has the potential to change the world. Not from the ego at that point, because you're coming from a place of where you are letting life flow through you rather than from you, remember. And when you do that, you actually bring eternity or the presence of what is holy into the world from a place where the mind was willing to move forward beyond itself and beyond its own needs and wants, to a place where what can be known through them becomes the ultimate goal. And when it does, that's when people become greater than life itself. And that's when you become larger than life.
The gift of words is powerful. You're right. Words are powerful. And they can change
every
the way
single
you
one
think.
Of them.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, but when you said writing, you're right. When I want to, you know, write something, I'll put on classical music. Or I'll go into a place where there's nobody bothering me, and I'll just put on my Pavarotti or something, because I like classical music, because I majored in music in college. But I found that what you just said, you never know what you can write, and you would know. Your dad had Alzheimer's. My mom had Alzheimer's. I think that was the hardest time of my life for 11 years, taking care of her, and not doing what a lot of people told me to do, but doing what I knew was right. And when I wrote A Daughter's Promise, I think that was my way of writing how I felt, but more likely how she felt. And I guess, you know, you understand what I'm saying, because Alzheimer's is a death sentence. We know that. And it took a lot of toll on me. And when I found out that she had Alzheimer's in 2003, her primary care doctor made some suggestions, which I'm very proud of myself, I ignored. And I did what I thought was right for her. The promise I made to her was never to put her in a nursing home or an assisted living. And I had to sign it, because she was aware. And I said, you know what, Ma, you're right, but I'm going to go visit. And I did, because I like to see for myself. Sam, I went to 20 nursing homes in my area and out of my area. I came back with brochures and stuff, and I said, I wouldn't put anybody there, in any one of them, even the best ones ever. I got a whole different perspective of the lack of care, the unfeeling, the caring, the way that they did not take care of patients, the cleanliness that was not there. Even the top one in the Bronx, the best one, I wouldn't put anybody there. And when I came home, her doctor, as a matter of fact, the nurses in the hospital called me to come to a meeting because my mother was there. And they said, well, we're going to do this. I said, no, you're not. I said, I'm going to take care of it. I had to pay $6,000 a month for her night care in order to keep her home. And I went into debt. But you know what? If I had to do it again, I'd do it the same way. I mean, there was one nursing home, Tim, that I went into that the head manager, this resident, came up to give her a hug, and she smacked her, and she fell on the floor. There was another one that, was horrible. I reported it. I mean, I saw atrocities that I could not believe existed. And if you don't see it with your own two eyes, I saw one where they had the patients lined up, they were drugged, and they were warned not to speak. I said, they're allowed to speak. They're humans. They're not. They didn't have Alzheimer's. They were whatever. The nurses in front of them were whatever, and they didn't want to deal with them. So they just drugged them. And one of them happened to be the head manager's mother. I said, if this is what you did to your mother, I hate to see what would happen if you went here yourself. And I walked out. So how did you deal with this? because that gets us into the hospice care. There's the different levels of hospice care. There are different levels of hospice care or end of life. So how do you deal with that when it comes to Alzheimer's, when you know eventually you're going to have to deal with it? And I know I had to deal with it, you know, with my mom. So how do you deal with end of life care? What is the best way path to follow when you're talking about it, besides the fact that nurses become critical at that particular point?
Yeah, well, there's the danger of staying in clinical and critical thinking, which we're taught very well in the medical field, and to see people as a disease rather than a person anymore.
Yeah.
And, and assumptions are made, and you feel like you've got to control them since they're out of control, or it's assumed that they're out of control. But I've seen the opposite as a chaplain a lot of times. When I go into an Alzheimer's patient's room, I may start singing to them a gospel hymn, or I might just sit with them for a while and listen to the world they're in at that point and let them talk. There was one lady where every single visit that I'd go see with her, she thought I was her husband who had died years ago. So we would, and she had two rocking chairs, and she used to talk to her husband in the empty rocking chair. But one day I came in and I sat in that rocking chair to see what. Well, she all of a sudden thought I was her husband. Started talking to me about the kids. So I started talking to her about the kids as though I knew them as my children with her. And I got memories from her that I found out was authentic later from family members, because I took the time to sit there and be with her in her world instead of in mine. And what was normal to her is not going to be normal. It's never any of us anyway. All of us think differently. We just don't give each other room to breathe a lot of times with our thoughts and emotions, because we want to impede upon each other with our own thoughts and emotions that we think are more important than other people's, and which is what goes on in a lot of places like this. But if we give people room to express themselves, they might actually become clear for moments at a time, just enough for them to relive an experience in a more authentic way than if they were what we would call saying, express it from their head instead of their heart. She was able to express from her heart something her mind couldn't articulate and formulate into words, because she was given the space from that place to do so. And the real healing that took place in that moment was her being able to voice what had a lot of meaning and purpose in her own life, even though she couldn't put it in those words. But it not only that, it gave her the opportunity to open her heart once again and engage into the world around her from a place of innocence and purity, because she was given the freedom to do so. And what it did is it opened up a moment of clarity for her that enabled her to connect to the world again from the place that made sense to her. And, you know, many of us don't know all the details about what causes Alzheimer's and dementia, other than through physical factors that we have learned through science. And for all we know, people may slip into those places because they didn't feel like they were given room to express themselves authentically from a place that made sense to them. So they escape into a whole nother world. And that's called cognitive dissonance. And all of us get into that at some level each and every day. From the moment you wake up in the morning, where you experience life flowing through you, to the middle of the day, and towards the end of the day, you're separating yourself much further from that place that you know who you are, where clarity is, and what's important to you is front and center, like it is in the morning while you're maybe drinking that first cup of coffee. And then your mind starts shifting over into the agenda of your day and pulls you further and further away from that. That's called cognitive dissonance. We don't know how far some of these people have been stretched to create what to a place where they just give up on the world around them and want to live in a world that makes the most sense to them, and go quiet. And they get quiet because they have no room for growth into a world that no longer makes sense to them. And,
no, I understand. I understand what you're saying. My mother used to do that too, but I used to make her talk. The aides that she had to ask her questions, so they were coming in the morning and they would go, Ruthie, and say what she would say, and she knew who they were. That was really scary. She really knew who they were, which is amazing. And on Thursday, she knew Joyce came, and she knew when Joni came, but she also knew that on Thursdays, my sister came, and my sister died out of nowhere. And she would say, where's Marcia? I said, she was working. Finally, about a few weeks later, she said, she's gone. She's not coming back. She just knew. So in order to keep her, you know, talking, I would say to the aides, if she wants breakfast, you have to ask her, show her a picture of oatmeal, show a picture of an egg, and ask her to choose what she wants. We made her talk. Coffee or tea, Ruthie, what do you want? She would say both. That was my mother. I would take family pictures, and I would take it out of an album, and I would have her sit with me and put them back so she would remember family things. But there were people that she didn't remember, and yet when my aunt came, she said, you're my sister-in-law. You're right. They have her long-term memory was better than her short-term memory. So Alzheimer's it's powerful. It's sad. And no matter what you do. So how do you deal with this? We have about 15 minutes. How do you deal with this at end of life? Because I couldn't deal with it for a while. I mean, my doctor literally said to me one day, why don't you just sign a DNR? I said, why don't you sign your own? She's not ready to go. I said, when my mother is ready to go, I'll know. And I did know, because she was in the hospital, and she looked at me and she said, I can't do this anymore. And then she closed her eyes. So I feel like she knew when her time was up. I said, are you very sure? Because you've been driving me crazy for so many years. What am I going to do without you to tell me what to wear and what to do? And she just looked at me and said, no more. And that was it. And I just thought she went to sleep. When I came out, I walked out for like 5 minutes, and then they called me, and the nurse was very cold. And she said, your mother expired. I said, she's not a parking meter. She passed away. I said, how dare you say that? And I reported it to her primary. I said, how did they say things like that? She just said it wrong. So how do you deal with that? I mean, really, that's the hardest thing in the world, you know, to say to somebody, you should just sign a DNR for your mother. What's the difference between, I mean, that's the end. But when do people decide that they need hospice or different kinds of care at home rather than putting them in a nursing home? How does that work?
Well, there's certain guidelines and measurements in science that determine where people are given their certain diseases that they have. And if you meet that criteria, a doctor has to certify that, and a nurse comes out to evaluate you, puts together the paperwork or the results of tests that have been run to determine that a person is ready for care. And if they qualify for end-of-life care, they can get all of the services that come into people's homes, such as a social worker, a chaplain, get a bath aide, an aide that comes in that works with the nurse to help her coordinate a care. The nurse is the one who coordinates all of the different services that I just listed. And then, of course, you have your director of nursing and administrative assistant and director of nursing that help along with that too as well to coordinate the overall health of the organization. But I want to get back to what your mom said at when she knew it was her time to go. And did she die not long after she had said those words?
No, what happened was she looked at me and the doctor came in and said she had some kind of hernia or something, and they were actually going to operate, and I wasn't sure if that was the right protocol. So I said to her, Ma, do you want to get rid of that on your stomach? And she said, no. And then they came in, and I said to her, "Keep." My brother was on the phone, and he talked to her, and she knew it was him. Me, she just looked at me and said, "Yeah, you're my whatever." But you know my brother, she said, "Keep." About 10 minutes later, she just looked at me. She said, "No more." I said, "What do you mean, no more?" I said, "You've been picking on me for like 100 years. Who's going to pick on me and tell me I don't look right?" I mean, one day I walked into the house, and she said to me, "You used to be like this. I was 200 pounds. I'm like 110 now, 108. And she said, "You used to be like this. Now you're like that." I go, "Thank you very much for my compliment. I really need this." And I walked out, and I said, my husband said, "You look like you could use some coffee or something." So we went out for about a half an hour, and they called me, and they said, "You need to come back. Your mother expired." And she must have just closed her eyes when I walked out. And the way the nurse said it was very troubling. And I called up, as a matter of fact, I had come to the hospital that night, and this other nurse said, "You know, we're giving her blood, and she doesn't deserve it. Somebody else should get it." I said, "You about to get out of here. I don't trust you anymore."
Oh, yeah.
You got the one girl. Yeah. I mean, I dealt with Medicare, Medicaid, and got services that nobody got. I mean, I had split shift 24 hours where I had one aide that came at 8 in the morning and one came at night. And it was 3 days and 4 days. And if one of my aides couldn't come, I had 7 on the list. And they knew, don't even mess with Fran.
Yeah.
Just send the people that she wanted. And this nurse said to me, "She doesn't deserve to have this medication. I can give it to somebody else." I said, "You just take care of my mother." I said, "And if she dies because of you, you're going to have a problem." And I went to the nurse supervisor, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I called my doctor at home. And I said, "You get him on the phone now. This is not going to happen." He felt that I should do a DNR, and I felt I should do what I think is right. And about a couple of hours later, she decided, she closed her eyes when they came in, and she said, "No more." When I walked back in and she was gone, it was the hardest thing to look at. But what I find, it was Einstein at the time, Einstein Hospital, which is now Montefiore. The nurses back then were so kind and so caring that they said to me, "You could stay here for an hour, 2 hours, and just talk to her and just stay here and settle it within yourself that you know that she's gone, but she's not gone. She'll always be there." And then when they came in to, you know, to cover her with the shroud and stuff, that's when I had to walk out. That was the hard part. I couldn't deal with that because I know my mother. I said, "You can't cover her face while I'm standing there because she gets claustrophobia." So they didn't do that until I walked out. There was such respect that it was unbelievable. So that when everything was done, whatever, I sent a huge, huge, big thank you basket to them for taking such great care of my mother. Because they really, I mean, they didn't have to do half of what they did. But how do you deal with that? I mean, I just literally stood there and watched her go. I was like, it's so hard. And yet I knew I had to do it, and I knew I could deal with it. And I knew she was going to go, but how do you deal with that after?
Well, let me go back to before a little bit, because my dad, when he knew it was his time to go, a lot like your mom, he said, this is where I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And he just said it in a strange way. My dad's been a minister all of his life, and for 60 years before this came upon him. And his was quick. His didn't last as long as a lot of people, although there were changes happening years before that we noted. But when it really came on hard with him, it was over. But the when he said that, it resonated in a place where I wondered if he was giving up at that point. But he wasn't doing it, I mean, and he had to feel the full force of that. And I could have gone in, and I was the only one that heard it in the room. And I could have gone, because he said it real quiet. And I knew better as a chaplain not to impede upon that process. So I went over and just sat by him and just looked at him and just let him feel the force of what he had just said. And a couple of weeks later after that, I wasn't there at the time because I couldn't go that day. But my brother and sister and my mom was there with him on Thanksgiving Day. He was at the nursing home because mom had trouble caring for him, and the doctor just said, "You're going to kill yourself if we don't put him there." So we put him in the nursing home, But Mom said, okay, we paid for the whole room. I'm laying in the bed right next to him. And they couldn't do anything about it. We paid for the whole room. And she stayed there for a couple of months until he died in the same room with him. And ate there, almost bathed there as much as she could. She did as much as she could. But and she'd go home once a week or so, a couple of times. But when she was not there, my sister was there. But and there's various reasons why that was going on, because if you're not there watching your loved ones, they don't always get the best care, like we've talked about.
Oh yes.
And but I want to get back to on Thanksgiving Day. You know how they invite family members to nursing homes and to eat with their loved ones. Well, my dad sat at the head of the table, and he told my brother and sister and mom that his time was up, and it was time for him to go. He was at peace, they told me it was a lot of silence during the meal, a lot of feelings going on, and no one wanted to cry in front of him, but they felt a lot of peace in knowing that he was at peace.
When
your mom did what she did, and when my dad did what he did in those two times, those two instances, they're probably far more clear about their place in life and where they're heading than most people that are supposedly alive and hiding behind roles and institutions that create an identity outside of themselves that they don't even have any idea that their next breath may be their last one. The gift of Alzheimer's is when you get those brief moments of times where they allow you to know that they are still in there and they're operating in the world, even though the world would label them and determine them as not being capable of doing so. They're actually coming from a place that might be far more clear than we are able to comprehend because of the distance that we have put ourselves from them, that we don't understand where they are coming from. And we've not taken the opportunity to understand where they're coming from. And if we did, it just might change us enough to recognize that the ones who have really lost it may not be the one that's laying in that bed.
That's true. I know it's funny, but my mom had a specific way that she would rest on her chair. She sat on a recliner. When my dad died, she didn't sleep inside anymore, so we bought her this big used lift chair, and she always had her head to the left. When we had a graveside, so when they brought the coffin to the funeral, to the cemetery, I said, I want to just say goodbye to my mother, and they opened it up. Her head was to the left. Like she was resting, like this is Ruthie, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm not gonna ever change. But I want to thank you so much. I want everybody to know that I'm not sure. It's tentative so far. Pastor Michael Jones will be here on Tuesday to talk about stress and anxiety in the world. On the 21st, Brian Moreland, Tomb of Gods. On the 26th, John Land. The Jessica Fletcher series. On the 28th, we're going to talk about voice in writing with five authors. And on the June 3rd, Alan Topol will be here with The French Revenge. That's just some of what I'm up to. I just take it one at a time and hope that everybody stays safe. I want to do a special shout out to all the EMTs, all the nurses, all the doctors, all the firefighters, all the teachers, everyone, all those essential workers, and everyone to me in my mind is essential. Parents, children, everyone counts. Everyone matters in this world. But I want to do a special shout out to the nurses and doctors of St. John's Riverside in Dobbs Ferry, because without you, I don't think I would have been okay. Thank you for making me feel that better, and thank you for taking care of everyone. Sam, thank you so much. If you want to do another show on another topic, just let me know. And this is a perfect time to do it. I learned a lot. If you didn't listen to the show, soul care, healing care, hospice care, end of life care, and just how to deal with life in a better place. Thank you so much, Sam. I hope your day goes beautifully. Everybody stay safe, stay home, and bye.